Let's go. Let's get into the actual X-Men portion of this part of this podcast, or these comic books from 1997. We got two issues tonight, Uncanny 342 and X-Men 62. We're going to get into the creators and all of that. We do get a creator change on the X-Men book, and we're going to have a fairly decent conversation about the drawing of Wolverine, or the interpretations of Wolverine's Bone Claw era. So we'll go with Uncanny first, and then we'll get to the X-Men book. We do have a guest appearance. But is it Shang-Chi? I never know if I'm saying the shit right. Is it Chai-Chi?
If we were to go by the movie, it was Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi. Okay.
Because he called himself Sean, and then the joke was you changed your name from Sean to Shang.
Yeah, so. Okay. I will try to make note of that as I make this mispronunciation for the next half an hour. All right, so let's jump into it. Our creative team. So this is the Joey Mad era on Uncanny. Scott Lobdell's writing both books. Again, if you go back and listen to one of the other episodes, remember Scott Lobdell's a terrible person. Google it, people. A terrible person, but whatever. Joey Mad is actually going to be finishing up here as we go through these books on Uncanny, introducing us to some characters that we would definitely like to get rid of. Spoiler alert. And then on other pencils is Carlos Pacheco, who was RIP, who just passed away late last year. That's your creative team. And he's going to be on both. Pacheco is going to be on the book for a little bit of time. And to give credit, as the book moves on, he kind of adapts his style a little bit to make it not look as I don't know what word I want to use, but this first issue was a little bit rough for him. If you remember the artwork.
Yeah. All right.
So here we go. Uncanny 342. Let's look at the plot points here. So after the battle between Cannonball and Gladiator, remember, in Manhattan, Gladiator transports the X-Men. He's like, there's a battle going on, and he uses like some Shi'ar transports and transports them out into space while Sam is looking on like, what about me? What the fuck?
Meet the most powerful person in the galaxy. You're not strong enough to go.
Yes.
Go on a spacefaring voyage with your friends.
Yes.
And that was some bullshit.
And after beating one of the most powerful beings in the universe, Cannonball is left on Earth to fight it out with Jean and Scott and Cyclops and get yelled at. All right. So the transfer from Gladiator puts them on the Shi'ar ship that's flying out of control completely. And my note says this book is pure Joey Mad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is at his peak powers here. Like, if you're like, oh my god, like, this is a book, this book looks amazing, Joey Mad at this era is really on top of his game. You could not mess with him in any way, shape, or form. And he, at that particular time, before he went creator owned, could actually put out a book every 28 days. Who would have knew, Brother Beavis?
No, apparently he lost that ability somewhere along the way. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the distinctive styles transitioning out of the Image era, who would then become part of the Image movement or whatever. But yeah, you know, definitely if you, you know, sometimes these books come and go, and like they drop in an artist where, you know, it's basically either trying to copy the whatever came before, or it's just a fill in and you just recognize that filler art almost immediately. This looks like, you know, this is a new, a brave, bold new look for the X-Men for sure. And he's definitely like, you know, this is his style for sure.
Yeah. This is like, what is it? Is it manga or anime? Like, I don't know the difference between the two, but it was definitely something that nobody else was doing in comic books at the time.
So manga is the printed form and anime is the animated.
Like animation. See, look, we learn everything, right?
Hopefully I got that right. Otherwise, we might get scorched. Yeah,
I wasn't familiar with your game.
I don't know her.
I don't know her at all. So, yeah, so they get transported out there. Ironically, Trish Tilby gets transported.
Right. Trish can go. Yeah, Trish can go, but Cannonball, no, you can't.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're not high, near, invulnerable or whatever when using your thing. But yeah, you got to stay on Earth, whereas we'll take the reporter with us out here. Yeah. Sure. So remember our B plot from the previous issues was Magneto trying to smash Rogue, or Joseph trying to smash Rogue, Gambit being in his feelings about that. So we have that going on. And then we have this subplot here in this book about Trish and Beast's romantic relationship as well. And so we'll talk a little bit about that in a bit. But so Trish Tilby actually made an appearance in that final episode of X-Men, the animated series that I watched. Yeah, she did. They did a news hit. And she was actually the reporter, you know. I was like, oh, Trish Tilby, blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of fun. But what do you know about this character overall, like outside of just Beast? Like, I don't, does she do any news that is not mutant related? I don't think she appears in anything else.
I don't think so. Although it's not out of the, like when they do like a world ending crossover and they, you know, there's any number of books they set up with like the news reports and they go across the networks. It's not inconceivable that she's done that, but I think she's primarily relegated to the X-Men for sure. And I remember her sort of being written out at the start of the Grant Morrison era when they redesigned Beast and she goes weird on him again. And then he tells her he thinks he's gay. It was just, it was bad.
Yeah, who the podcast that could come out of that era. So yeah, the ship is flying completely out of control. They don't know how to get control of it. I speak jive. I mean, Shi'ar. and so Beast is going to like, you know, kind of talk to the ship to try to get it back under control. I mean, and it's action to start that you wouldn't really expect, especially coming out of that the previous issue. But I mean, I really like kind of like that. But more than anything, I was just like, man, Joey Mad is like out of control here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, once they get the ship steady, they have to, decide what they're going to do. And while the ship is flying in and of itself, it's about to come into an asteroid field. So my slide says, never tell me the odds. Because like, all right, so how are we going to get through this asteroid field or we're going to die? And then that's really the cover of the book where Joseph Magneto goes out and steers the ship through the asteroid field to get them through the other side so the X-Men can make another terrible decision as a group. So, a really cool scene, a lot of action, you know, again, especially when we compare it to X-Men 62. But, like, you know, a good moment for Joseph to be a babyface.
Yeah. And the other thing about this, like, I can't remember, like, where we are in time. But even though she's still the object of effect, you know, the object of contention between Gambit and Rogue, are we now, like, entering in the era where Rogue is really one of the mainstays of the team? Like, I don't know what the setup was, but.
Yeah, like, we're on the start tail end of that. Yeah, like I think really she's about to become a much more prominent member on the team here.
Probably when because we still have like the revelation of Gambit as Sinister's bitch coming up. I think it's probably post that once she's separated from Gambit, because like her in the gold and blue era, start of the gold and blue, she was primarily like her budding relationship with Gambit, which has still not been, you know, still is in contention here because of Joseph primarily. So yeah, this is, I think, the continued push. And if we go back and listen to the Secret Wars podcast from almost back in the beginning, like,
yes,
she was that was like ground zero Rogue, just on the team, no confidence, getting tossed around. And and we're starting to see, like, you know, if you read any of the books now, like if Rogue is on the away team, then that somebody's getting their ass beat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so Rogue was definitely working the indies as a jobber, or the territories as a jobber, working her way, looking for her first big break. But yeah, no, this is there. And again, they've been teasing this, you know, kind of triangle between them all, you know, Gambit, you know, being the cool heel, like continually in this thing where it's, you know, he's kind of trying to push Joseph to see how far he would go. And this is a big part of that scene, you know, where he goes out there and he does that. And it's like, damn, man, I always thought he was going to fall on his face and then we'd all die. Wait, what? You know, that probably wouldn't have worked out either. But, you know, I mean, it's good. And so they make their way through there. And on my note, on their way to Bespin, apparently, you know, because I got to get this asteroid field, you know, to get over there. All right. So we got to talk about this. The X-Men always make the wrong choice in this era. This is the full over Xavierisms, is that a word? Maybe. Of the X-Men. But they are fully bought into the dream so much, or to what Xavier would do so much, that they continually put themselves in a situation or situations where it's not beneficial to them. Like, oh yeah, the Shi'ar are in trouble, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to put you on this screaming ship that you can't fly or whatever. And then once you do gain control of it, I'm going to need you to take this space portal to the other side of the universe that you would possibly would never come home from to go fight an enemy that you ain't never seen. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's the right thing to do. Like, seriously? Like, where's the benefit for the X-Men in that?
Well, I mean, is this the reason why there aren't a lot of black people in these comic books? Like, there's the old joke about the if the black people were in the Amityville Horror.
Yes. Like, yes.
Get out. Oh, too bad we can't stay, baby. Like,
exactly.
If there were more black people on the X-Men, would they have just turned the ship around and gone home?
Yes, exactly. Like, you know what? We're good, fam. Like, man, we can't do this without Sam. We should go home.
That's right.
Yeah. I was going to do it, but Sam ain't here, so we're going to go back and get Sam first. Yeah, seriously, though, like, there's no benefit for the X-Men here to save the universe. Let the Avengers do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what? Seriously.
They certainly are not. We've shown repeatedly they're not cosmically powered enough as either the Avengers or, from one perspective, the Fantastic Four, considering what Reed Richards can bring to bear. Yeah. And we do know, but they also know they can't call the Avengers for help.
That's because true.
They never, like, nobody comes to help them. I mean, I guess they're under you have to act under the principle, like, if we ignore this, like, then if the universe is destroyed, then we live within the universe and nobody's coming to help us. So I guess we got to do this. That's, I think, what you're led to believe.
Hey, man, we read a bunch of X-Men comic books. I ain't helping the Shi'ar with shit.
No.
Every time we help them, they shit on us. It, yeah. Nothing good ever comes. It's an abusive relationship.
Yeah, their depiction as birds is appropriate because they do end up shitting on everybody. Yeah, the Shi'ar are like, they kind of suck because they're not like they're always depicted as badasses, and they're kind of clearly not. And we're going to get to the principal perpetrator of that here shortly, that, like, they just keep pushing Deathbird. Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah. Bishop did. All right, here we go. So, yeah, this is just the Xavier influence in a bad way. There's no reason for them to go and do this, like, at all. I hate that idea. All right. So, yeah. So, Sam's back to the mid card, y'all. He had a push and a run at the top of the card and won. And then somehow they were like, yeah, Tommy Rich. Actually, get back down that card. All right.
Yeah, so, and not only mid card, or not only, but, like, look, they then stick him with, like, the four principal members of the X-Men and Sam.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. A couple of bits on this. Again, if you're looking online, one, please look at the depiction of Logan Wolverine in this book and contrast it to the one we're finna see here in a few minutes. There's that. So, yeah. And then they just come back and yell at him. You lost the X-Men? Where the fuck was y'all? I'm in the mid card. Why y'all yelling at me? Where was you? Why am I somehow responsible for all of these grown ass people? Tell me.
You consistently tell him he's not good enough and then give him a hard time because he only beat Gladiator, which only one person's other alien incarnation has of these other four has only ever beaten Gladiator. So
it's just I just can't. And also I thought this part about Sam too. I was like, damn, I lost the X-Men. I guess I'm just gonna go home. Like, you should have called somebody, like, you know, like some radio signal or do something, you know. Like, I mean, I don't know. Just
look at that neckline though.
Again, Pete Joey Man also gets you into these weird spots too. because of like the depth perception or whatever, he has a little bit weird. Like, okay, so Logan's like really like tiny like that, but his hands are fucking huge.
And his like, head's the same, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of weird. His ladies though are pretty tight. That's for sure. Like that Jean and that Storm are pretty great.
They do go to the same stylist.
Yes. Well, there's a whole podcast about that. Anyway, all right. So as they're screaming out to this thing that they're supposed to go and fix for the Shi'ar, Bishop is in his feelings. So we have to look at it, it's kind of hard to look at it sometimes in a time warp, but you got to too. Like, so he's been around since what, like 91?
Yeah.
Ish, early 90s.
He was from the start of the gold era.
Yeah, so he's been around, and so he's been with the team for a while. You know, he had a whole thought box about that I didn't cut here, but you know, about, you know, what's his place here, and you know, playing with my heroes or whatever from my youth, and you know, and all of the things that come with like this conflicted man out of time, which is fine. Like, I mean, again, we have issues with, I guess, more modern Bishop than this era Bishop until we get to this last panel, but like he's just, you know, he's kind of this man out of time, and Rogue is the one that winds up, you know, kind of soothing him and trying to get him through that, and which makes sense because she was the person that was put on the team where she had no business being there, mm-hmm. and was not out of time but completely out of place on the team and trying to find her way through that. So I kind of get that part. I did not like the overtly darkened out face on that final panel, though. You have the overbearing, huge black man staring at the diminutive little white woman where right. you can't see anything but his eyes. That's right. A choice.
Yeah, that is a choice.
Yeah. You probably could have skipped that part. I mean, again, fairly consistently, he does do this. Like, that's a part of his style. You know, I've seen that same thing with Gambit or whatever with the red eyes. But it looks a little weird.
Yeah.
Generally considered.
Yeah, I mean, like, if the point is he's surprised pleasantly, like some facial expressions would go along with yes. being like what he's actually feeling.
So. Yes. He's like, damn, the Rogue in my world had cakes. but here we are with you, and you know, whatever. And, okay, we have this kind of conversations about Bishop over time. You know, he's problematic,
mm-hmm.
to say the least. Mm-hmm. Especially the modern version. We're talking modern, like 2000 plus, like. Once his story of being the man out of time, once the reveal for Gambit is gone, which is one of the reasons that he had been there, whatever, he really had no spot. Like, he was just kind of floating around. Like, really, he was just there. I liken it to, you know, as you would say about the big monsters that fight Hogan. And then after that, after he defeats him, like, well, I'm just here. You know, now I'm in a different tag team, or I'm just
doing
a different gimmick. Right. And that's kind of where he was, too. Like, he never really becomes like this bigger thing or anything like that. It would have almost said that he would have been better to go back through the timeline and maybe just pull him out, you know, kind of like Cable, you know. And it really, he is kind of Black Cable in a sense.
Yeah.
And so Cable sucks too, so it's not just that. It's, you know, he's just kind of a man out of time. He just doesn't have the connection between, you know, his father and his clone mother. So I just, you know, and I think that's why he's probably been played with a little bit more with his character, kind of pushing him, I would say, further more alt-right than like kind of progressive.
Because, I would have said, know, Uncle Tom, but
yeah, that's fair as well. But they've kind of pushed him in these directions where aren't necessarily more progressive. And like, I haven't read the books recently. If Bishop made a heel turn, it wouldn't surprise me. Like, if he turned into like some, you know, Magneto-esque type character, but not in the sense of like, I want freedom for my people. It's just like, no, we need to control our people.
Uh-huh.
That's the problem. The people, our people are the problem, and they need to be controlled. And it has to be somebody that knows them well enough to control them. And
yeah. I don't think they've ever found a good way to sort of like lean onto his, you know, whether you want to call it law enforcement or military background.
Yeah.
From the XSE, and then make that not his defining characteristic, but is sort of inherent to him as he figures out what he is on the X-Men now.
Yeah, as he's I mean, he's had some decent roles in previous stuff, but then after a while, it was just like, well, I guess he's here, you know, and that's all we're going to do with him. I mean, again, I don't know that he makes it. I mean, we read all them Krakoa books. I don't remember Bishop being in any of them. I'm talking House and Power.
Yeah, not I think the, he like, ends up on the Marauders.
Is that where it was? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Didn't we read some
maybe book? Not the first run, the second run of the Marauders, at least for sure.
Didn't we read some book where him and Jean were like in a relationship in some era there too?
That I don't remember.
I think they were. It was something weird. They're all over the place, dude. All right. Anyway. So this is where they go out to. This was the Shi'ar Empire shipping station that it was not like it's empty. You know, they head out there and they don't know what's going on. And it should be like all this busy ports and all these things going on, but it's nothing. Like it's kind of like just dark. No shipping going out of it, just all of that. And of course, instead of, again, if there were black people there, we're like, well, she's close. Turn that shit back around, man. Where's that freaking portal to jump back to wherever we're supposed to go to? No, of course. Let's split up, gang, and let's get on this freaking ship and try to find out what's actually happening. Exactly. I mean, it's just, again, there's no benefit for the X-Men to do this. I understand what they're doing, but there's no, the X-Men don't benefit in any of this. And so as they're going through the ship, they do find the one lone survivor, as Brother Bruce alluded to earlier. It's Deathbird. It was the only living person on the ship, or living thing on the ship. And, you know, he consoles or whatever, and he finds her. Then that's the end of 362 or 342. So playing this ahead, if you remember, if you're a longtime reader, these two wind up in a relationship.
Yep.
And kind of a fucked up one too.
Yep.
Yep. Ooh, Bishop got problems, bro.
Yeah.
But again, and then he doesn't. But again, if, and I don't know if they're like, oh, well, we can't take, we got like two black people on the team. We can't take one of them off. Once this concludes, he could have just gone with the Shi'ar. He would have been happy there. And you could have brought him back whenever you needed the Shi'ar to come back. And like, oh,
he would make a great member of the Imperial Guard.
Absolutely. He's got freaking authoritarian police tendencies. He would have worked perfectly. But that's not what they do. So, yeah. I don't know. What's your hate for Deathbird?
She just sucks. Like, she's billed as, like, this unstoppable force that can take on all the X-Men. And she's like a... first of all, they're like, oh, you know, she's her avian nature gives her like hollow bone. Like, I don't even know. And then she's like, I don't know. She just fights. She just fights.
Yeah.
And like, it's never like she doesn't fight, but have the fourths of the Shi'ar Empire behind her. She's because she's black sheep for real.
Yeah.
And she fights. Well, yeah, you know, she's not a threat.
Refreshing my memory. When she does stab Colossus, was he even in his armored form? Like, remember they come down to Earth after they fought, what was it? I don't know if it was the Brood or not. And then she stabs Colossus through the chest. But I don't even remember if he was in the actual armored form.
Was that like, I think they had fought like other people.
Okay. Yeah,
I think he had to run. He had on that card. I think he had a gauntlet.
Yeah,
he had like three matches before that.
Yeah, that's her most memorable moment for me. And to be honest with you, this, because I remember reading this and like, really, Deathbird and Bishop, really? Yeah.
This was just like we got to find. This is like the WBCW storytelling. Like, we need a new relationship. Spin the wheel, spin the other wheel.
Yeah, do y'all like the ship? Yeah.
Yeah. Is it makeup, breakup, line, or hiding some secret?
Yeah.
Who's on one side and who's on the other? Just keep spinning that wheel. That's the plot.
They could have easily wrote. It feels like we're shitting on Bishop, and I guess we kind of are, but like, you could have moved him on. Like, it really wouldn't have mattered, like, at that point. And you could have brought him back whenever you needed or wanted to. Because now you just bring him back for nothing.
now that we've said it, I think just parking him with the Shi'ar as a member of the Imperial Guard who could periodically drop in and be the hook for them to go do some space bearing or something would have been fine.
Yeah, like, oh, you know what? We didn't want to send Gladiator because, you know, y'all hate him and we hate him too. So I'm here to tell y'all that, like, hey, we need y'all, or this is about to happen, so we need your help.
Whenever we send Gladiator to just tell you we need your help, you end up fighting him. So we're just going to send somebody you might actually listen to. Yeah, that would make far too much sense. And ironically, like, I think they send Cannonball ends up going to the Shi'ar because he hits up with somebody there. So.
Yeah, he does.
So Cannonball took Bishop's spot.
Yeah, damn, of course. White man. Anyway, all right, so X-Men 62, y'all. Scooby-Dooby-Doo! This is a real freaking recap of a Scooby-Doo plot. So they're all, the real X-Men. Are off in space fighting the Shi'ar. The Scooby Doo team, Shang-Chi. I ain't never get this shit right. X-Men gone woke. All right, so Shang-Chi to track down a MacGuffin from Sebastian Shaw related to the Legacy virus.
Oh, yeah.
That's the plot, y'all.
I remember
this.
Yeah,
we get our new artist. But this is again, I said it before we started recording, I think too, this is clearly the B book. I don't care who you put in it. I don't care who you put on it. I don't care who's drawing it. This is the B book. And then like, as you start to go through this, this is like, why the fuck are there two X-Men books?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's really no, this is a Marvel team up. This is a Marvel 2-in-1. It's one shot issue. This is a 3-part episode with Shang-Chi. What?
Yeah.
And the villain, Sebastian Shaw, but not a Hellfire Club version of him. Legacy virus. Like, we're pretty much B-book. Completely. Yeah. Completely B-book. Like,
I don't think they ever found a way to use, like, you know, to make it maybe the main book is a team and the side book is just offshoots or what people were doing in the background. They tried to just manage the team across two books in a weird way that becomes hard to follow.
Yeah, it's so pointless. So Shang-Chi used to be an MI6. Didn't know that. Not at all. And then he had gotten called to the house of his former operative or whatever to get, you know, to get some information. And of course, ninjas. Of course. It's a Japanese dude. Is he Japanese or is he Chinese? I don't even know. He gets attacked by ninjas. Of course, because they're Asian. Of course there's going to be ninjas. Of course. Why wouldn't there be ninjas? You know, so again, it's a big comic book fight type of situation. Now, he doesn't have any...
For the record, power, right? I believe Shang-Chi is Chinese.
Chinese, thank you.
Historically would be Japanese.
Right, yeah.
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, of course. But Shaw didn't... Shinobi's mama is Japanese, though, so I guess in that regard it would make sense, because...
Yeah, Shinobi Shaw has the...
Yeah, it's half Japanese.
Yeah,
okay. So, they attack him, but he don't have no powers, right? He's just like a badass, the greatest
martial artist of all time. Yeah, I don't think he has like even the Iron Fist or anything like that.
And that's what I'm saying. So there's 100 dudes here. He's fighting them off. Just says he's the best. He don't just get swamped.
Have you never seen a Bruce Lee movie?
That's fair. Oh, they all run at you one at a time and AEW like.
No, that. Well, no. There's a combination. You either fight the crowd or then you go through champions one by one.
Oh, okay. Noted. I don't know the history of this particular character and the fact that he got a movie that I saw, but I don't remember anything about it outside of Trevor coming back. He was in that when God, who that lady's name was doing the Domino book a couple, like 5 years ago. He was in that as essentially her love interest, and he was pretty good in that. Like, I think the handling that way, but I think, you know, they also removed him from all of the Asian tropes, and maybe that would probably be a little bit better. But I got nothing.
He exists exclusively because Bruce Lee and martial arts in general were popular in the 70s, and Marvel was trying to get some of that Yang money. As classic favorite Richard comedian Pryor would say. Yes. I mean, he exists exclusively because of that. And so whatever they've done to blend him into mainstream Marvel is just a byproduct of they simply wanted a character to fill that niche.
Yes. And again, we're always problematic when you have a character of color created and written by white folks. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be this, you know, like it's just this. Anyway. Okay, so can we talk about
the differences? I have that up here too, yeah.
Yeah, can we talk about this? Because before it gets into something else here, this is, okay, so remember the plot point was when Wolverine had his adamantium taken off, or taken out, ripped out, it unleashed his animal instincts or whatever, and it turned him a little bit more into whatever the fuck this is.
Feral.
Feral. Thank you. What? Why is there such a difference between the two? Like Joey Mad had him as, he has some wild hair, but he didn't look crazy. Yeah. He just had some wild hair. Pacheco,
I feel like there was probably a paragraph that was circulated about what Wolverine was supposed to be, and then it was left up to interpretation.
Right.
The rest is an exercise for the artist. There's definitely some choices that have been made here.
Yeah. Okay, so that's why they have editors on books.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, hey, Carlos, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to work for me, brother.
This is the only way they can stick to the monthly schedule is to avoid reshoots.
Okay. We're going to talk about Wolverine skinny jeans or no?
Yeah, like he's feral enough to dress himself and put this belt on. Yeah.
It just makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like, it just makes no sense. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's too broad. The interpretation is way too broad.
Fangs and the nails and the bone. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's his shoulders and the elbow fur.
Yeah. It's too much. They went too far.
Yeah.
And it only gets worse.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be one thing if they were like portraying him as like Wild Child in Age of Apocalypse, where he's like just a literally a monster.
Right.
Or a beast or whatever.
No, he's having ass conversations with SAQ.
Yeah. Words. He has like his font. Font is a little bit skewed and occasionally bold. But other than that, he can say basically everything he ever would have said.
Correct. Yeah. It's just, I, and this is before, right? This is before he gets imbued, where he puts on the do-rag and he has Apocalypse's, like something happened with Apocalypse.
So the cover showed him with his do-rag. So I don't know. I think there's not strong editing of Wolverine's arc at this point.
Yeah,
he's many things to many people, let's just say.
Yeah, just get him in the book because we need to sell books.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. All right. Anyway, so when Wolverine does pop up on the scene,
just put Piper out there. Let's give him 5 minutes. It's let him figure it out.
When he does pop up on the scene, he makes the hot tag to save Shang-Chi, and then he makes a heel turn. Of course, we're attacking because, of course, you know, we got this freaking hot, baby face that came in. He comes in and heals on him. And then, of course, he gets the upper hand, too, by the end of it or whatever. Like, that's just where it is.
He's feral, but he still remembers all the discipline of his martial arts training.
Correct. Yeah. See? book. This shit is an annual.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know a lot of modern comic folks don't understand how awful annuals used to be, and maybe they still are. They probably are. This is an annual, but a three-part annual, which makes it worse. Like, nobody, who was asking for this? Like, especially in light of the plot that you have going on in the other book. Wow, there's this world-spanning freaking thing that's like a whole universe could be destroyed. And you've turned them into street-level heroes. You still got Jean Grey and Cyclops here.
Yeah.
And Storm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, man. I ain't pulled a thing in. And of course they try to, make sure like Storm and Shang-Chi. She can't get a brother for nothing, man. Like It's just never going to happen. I mean, again, person of color. Okay, I guess, you know, whatever. Like, it's so obvious in other shows, like, when there's two black people on there, of course they put them together. Storm, there's two black people on the team. Like, her and Bishop ain't never crossed no kinds of paths.
Well, the funny thing is, like, they got her out of the Forge relationship by teasing a Bishop relationship that never came.
Never came about, yeah. And again, technically, Forge, person of color. I got you. I understand. I mean, again, this is just a tease here. It's just like, you know, whatever. I get that part, too. But come on, man. Not one brother. Nowhere. Anywhere. Except Black Panther, which they ruined both characters over the course of time. Like, where they just ruined both of them and made them both look ridiculous. Ugh. Don't get me started. All right. So, yeah. So, basically, there's this dude. I don't even remember what his name is, but he was the handler for Shang-Chi when he was in MI6. And there's this magical Asian trope that they need to go and find. It's a MacGuffin. And they're like, well, if we can get that particular thing, that'll help us get to this elixir, of course, an elixir. This magical elixir will help maybe possibly change the tide on, you know, solving the legacy virus or whatever. But you got to wind up getting it from in Japan or whatever, Hong Kong, I believe. And, you know, and it's tied to Shaw. Is that fair?
I think so.
Yes. Gene and Scott are reduced to freaking voyeurs and slipper over here, like, watching this whole situation play out. And of course, you know, Shang-Chi, who has no real powers, but he can sense things.
Yeah.
Yeah. His instincts. Like, even though he's being Psy-blocked, he can sense it. Because he's a magical Asian dude. This is bad, dude. Tell me I'm crazy. Tell me I'm crazy that this is just a bad book.
No, you're not crazy.
This is just bad. Because, again, as much as I shit on the first one, I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty good. This is, like, good art. Storytelling's going. I hate the idea that X-Men are doing this dumb shit, but that's fine. It makes sense, blah, 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 blah. It had a start, a middle, and an ending that made sense. Yeah.
And he hasn't graced our pages yet, but you remember the one story where Sebastian Shaw was like a monster heel with a whole ass faction and a legitimate threat?
Yeah.
Did he ever do anything?
Yeah.
Ever?
Never.
Again?
Yeah. Right. No. It's all been plot and, you know, twirling mustache stuff. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like, you know, and even this doesn't even get to that point either. It's always he's behind the scene manipulating things and all of that. Like, that's that. But again, like, it's just who went up to the meeting to freaking Jim Shooter or whoever the editor in chief was at the time? It's like, hey, you know what? We should get Shang-Chi in a story. Why?
Yeah. They must have been trying to do something. This feels like it was, you know, we were trying to get him back in a story or trying to relaunch somebody else's book or something. So
let's
make him relevant again, or the trademark's about to expire. So we got to use him.
Yeah. Yeah. Or we're going to try to give him a monthly again. Mm-hmm. Because I swear he got a monthly maybe coming out of this too. This is one of those Hutch freaking, you know, Fruity Pebbles came out in 82 situations. Like, he would remember some dumb shit like this, because it feels like there might've been one of those, like, oh, well, you know, this is his, was that shit a pilot, you know, out of a established show, you know, to try to give him the rub to get his monthly book started. But no, nobody was asking for this. Nobody. So anyway, one more slide, I believe. And so, yeah, so that's it. So Shaw is going to mansplain his evil plot as to why he's actually doing this particular thing. And, you know, and of course, as they're, you know, getting all that together, we get more ninjas and more ninjas attacking. And of course, Wolverine bits to be the one to, you know, sense it, start it, fight it off, and then actually end the book on a panel with him looking up for a whole bunch of things. I mean, that's it. You know, we get a little bit of Chinese and Hong Kong history, you know, by Shaw explaining all that. Once again, the white man explaining the history of other people and that he helped write. And that's the book. This book sucked. Like, I was so mad. Like, because the other book had me kind of hyped, and I was like, oh, okay. And then as soon as I saw the art, I was like, God, I don't remember Pacheco, you know, RIP and all, but I don't remember his books looking like this.
Yeah.
Like, it takes him a little bit of time to find his style for the X-Men, because it's, well, you know, it's,
I think, cool, too, like, if you took, like, if you gave the Phantom Menace treatment to this and just took all the pictures of Wolverine out, the art, the rest of the book would not be so ridiculous. It would also not, it'd be kind of, like, it would look like somebody trying to, like, do a cross between Joe Madureira and Jim Lee, probably.
Yeah.
Which is probably where it's going to end up. But, like, the depiction and the characterization of Wolverine in this is just so over the top. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's beyond over the top. And
but the other thing, too, is, like, if you really, like, if the point of this was to make it Wolverine and Shang-Chi team up, like, putting the other powerhouses of the team in the story, but on the sideline, probably was a mistake.
Right. Yeah. Well, and Storm has no role really in the particular book. And then, I mean, they've been, because you could have told this story just with Wolverine, or just maybe if he had just taken over with him Cyclops or Sam.
This would be great,
like,
for the Wolverine book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And again, what, we're 97. So, I mean, again, we're pretty Wolverine centric as it is, but I think it's actually going to get a little bit even worse after this. But, like, it's just, like, come on, man. Like, this is not it. Like,
we get into the seasoned veteran grandfather of the team Wolverine era, which is also not great.
Well, then that's also because we're rolling up on the first X-Men movie. Which puts it into another stratosphere, which also makes it terrible again, too. So, the world. God, what's the date on Wolverine and the X-Men? That's got to be, 2004, 5-ish, I would imagine.
It came out after Last Stand, I think, didn't it?
Yeah, so that would be around that era, I would assume. My kids are born, but they were pretty young. I don't know. This book sucked. So our hope is that the X-Men 97 cartoon does not do any of this.
did they do the Legacy Virus, did they not?
They did do a little bit of a version of the Legacy Virus there, yes.
The Legacy Virus sucked. That was, the Legacy Virus was a drain on the X-Men for the longest time.
No, the Legacy Virus is the spider clones.
Yeah, like, pretty much.
Yeah. It's just something that was there, and they
spun the AEW devil.
Yeah, they put themselves in a situation where, like, we started this. We have no idea how to fucking get out of it, and we're just gonna, like, keep it hanging around. But I can imagine that they already did that in the cartoon, kind of, sort of. So I wouldn't imagine. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm curious. Like, looking ahead in these books, there's no chance that any of these plots make it into that cartoon. Maggot is not making an appearance in this. Marrow is not making an appearance.
Marrow probably. I wouldn't hold off on that. I could see Marrow showing up.
Oh, God. But I'm just saying, like, I don't think any of the plots of those.
Because don't you think that Mohawk Storm is going to lead us to a Morlock story? And if so, we're going to get Marrow.
That story.
Well, we haven't gone back, though.
I'm thinking maybe. I don't know. I mean, because Mohawk comes from the thing with Rogue over there. With
That was when Rogue first came on the team.
Yeah, and it's at least it just feels like when we were talking about Krakoa when it started. It's like, you know what? I like the idea of being excited about something with the X-Men, and then, like, I think Sandman sent that out to us, or maybe I sent it to y'all with the plot for the next two, what, the books here in this era coming up, where who was the leader? It was like Kitty Pryde and somebody was the leader of the X-Men. And I was like, I have no interest in any of this crap. Like, hold on. I'm going to pull it up because I know it was just here. Like, this is just.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Like, yeah, but it's in the future. It's another one of those, like, 10 years, 100 years, 1,000 years.
Oh, okay. Maybe. Yeah. So, yeah, Rogue and Kate Pryde lead the X-Men in the summer relaunch. Rogue's team, Nightcrawler, Gambit, and Wolverine. And then Storm's team. It might become the president.
And aren't they putting in that Chimera character who was, like, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, and I don't know who else, like, five different X-Men in one?
Come on. Whatever. It's just enough. Like, enough. Like, all I'm saying is that I'm excited about this cartoon. I don't think anything of this stuff that we've read is going to appear in it. And that's probably the best thing that they could do.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So that's it. So we'll be back. We will definitely probably be recapping these X-Men cartoon episodes. I can't imagine that we wouldn't, unless they suck. And can we call out Hutch on this? Like, oh yeah, we should be recapping those episodes. We tried to do that. We were doing that. And you shit on that cartoon like it was something that was the worst thing ever. What the hell?
His whole premise was, it's not as good as Batman the Animated Series, so it sucks. And we spent the entire time like, no, you're not wrong about half of that, but that doesn't mean that it sucks.
Yes.
Like, these things can both be true. Like,
it
can both not be as iconic or visually, like, reminiscent of what's, you know, regarded as one of the greatest shows ever, but that doesn't mean it sucked, right?
Yeah, and it was
the first three seasons I think are really strong.
Yeah, the last
then two. When the animation falls apart and they start to run out of stories, it definitely ran its course.
And that's what that's my biggest concern about the relaunch, is where are you getting stories from? Like, retelling any of that stuff is not going to work. And again, you've pretty much mined all of the good stories from the Claremont era, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're gonna do, I mean, they kind of did a fake Brood. I mean, you kind of mined all of that. Awful. Yeah, you kind of did that. So
the ones I've seen so far, like I said, I think they're gonna do a Madeline Pryor Goblin Queen, and unfortunately, I think there's also some promotional pictures for the Exterminator, who was like introduced in an annual, and he was a 90s-esque costume design assassin of some sort I don't think ever had a decent story. So I'm not sure either. But
there's probably a decent Onslaught story in there, since you wrote Xavier out.
Well, you kind of need Onslaught back for that, though, right?
That's what I'm saying, but maybe he comes back on.
Didn't they do an Onslaught something or other?
I thought maybe the character appeared, but it wasn't like an Onslaught story.
Well, they had he was like Dark Xavier at the start of when they were like really limping into the Dark Phoenix story.
Yeah.
It was like he was, because he wore a cape.
He had a cape. Oh, that's fucking awful too. All right. So we'll be back. Like I said, we'll probably maybe get maybe another show of these episodes in before the cartoon starts. And then again, that's going to be a Saturday morning routine here. And we'll start to watch back and that. And we'll probably recap. Maybe they surprised us in Krakoa. I've been saying for the longest time, I thought that's how they were introduced in the movies. So maybe there's some version of that where they were like, fuck it, we're going to Krakoa. And, you know, we'll plot out from there, which would be surprising, but, you know, I'm sure they don't want to pay whatever that dude is, that money to use all that stuff that he.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I'm sure that's what it is. If anything, but
whatever. I mean, being in an alternate dimension or a multiverse is equivalent to being off on Krakoa. So they could, you know, have some organic technology that is a gate to somewhere and basically get the same payoff.
Wow, that'll be fun. All right, y'all. Again, SoundCloud, iTunes, not Stitcher, Google Play, all of that. Search Brothers Comics. It's X-Men 97. We're excited for this cartoon. Comic books. All right. We'll see everybody on the other side. Say good night, sir.
Good night.
Peace, everybody. And end.